Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Everybody's got a little Christmas day in them. You know what I'm saying? The day that you kind of live for, you, Douglas, on the calendar every year. For me, for example, it's that opening day of college football when all the games happen. That's kind of my Christmas day. Today is Grant's Christmas day. It is pitchers and catchers. You could hear it in his voice. He was running around this week. He was so excited to get down to Florida, ready for baseball. And because there's a rebirth. That's what the one thing is true. Baseball, probably more so, it retains that the opening day of baseball retains that rebirth kind of feel to it, doesn't it? I mean, it's like here's the newness of spring or something when it happens.
I can see that with baseball, but I think that way with every sport, and when it's coming back around, we think that way with football. People feel that way about the NBA, but it's something about the Boys of Summer, because that's what they're called, like that. You just know, especially if you live in one of them northern states when it's really, really cold, and when pitches and catches roll around, that it won't be long now. Summer's right around the corner.
Well, there's that. There's Speed Week at Daytona this week, and to have the number 88 on the pole, which is pretty funny if you think about it.
Okay, I'm a huge non-conspiracy theorist in sports. I don't think anything is rigged. The only thing in sports I 100% believe is rigged is the Daytona 500 pole, because I don't think it really matters. They go ahead, the 1 and 2 are locked in, and then the rest of it are of the how you qualify is based on the dual races. That used to be the Gatorade 2125s. And every year, it's something that's new in the sport. Like Danica Patrick's first full season,
I remember that.
In the Cup Series, she won the pole. When Chase Elliott took over for Jeff Gordon, he won the pole. Alex Bowman just happens to win as he takes over for Dale Earnhardt Jr. He happens to win the pole. It's too much, because NASCAR needs to always start with a splash, and so they always pump up a driver, I feel like.
I remember when Danica was sitting on the pole, and James Franco did opening. Remember that, the opening ceremony? He's like, drivers and Danica. I thought that was real disrespectful. That was real disrespectful. But there is something to that, Bo. I do believe that. I do believe that there's some conspiracy to the person who sits on the pole at the beginning of the NASCAR season.
And it's only been recent. I will say, it's been like last 7 years. But every one of those years you go back and look, there's something going on with that.
All right. I'll buy into your little conspiracy theory. But, you know, if it's a little bit rigged, we're talking about the poll at Daytona. If it gets them a little pop in the news cycle, okay. I mean, it really, really affect the race. But I have a hard time believing that, though, because considering the fact that there is no race that anybody wants to win more than Daytona. It is the Super Bowl of auto racing.
And it's at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it's the very first race out of the thing, and it makes careers. You win Daytona, it makes your career. Ask Derek Cope, you know, for example. Did Derek Cope do anything except win Daytona?
Okay, let's go through this. Danica Patrick, 2013, her first full season. Austin Dillon won in 2014 the Daytona pole, and guess what happened? He brought back the number 3, and it was his first full year of Cup racing. Jeff Gordon just happened to win it in 2015, the year he was retiring, his last year in the sport. 2016 was the Chase Elliott takeover. Now, 2017, they had nothing to promote, so Chase Elliott won it again. And then this year, Alex Bowman takes over for Dale Earnhardt Jr. in the 88, and he wins
it. But again, it makes careers.
What does that have to do with what he's talking about?
But see,
so because the race, I'm not talking about winning the race. I'm talking about the pole. It's the way they start the season. They want to pub a driver, so they start, because nothing is more iconic other than actually winning the race than leading the cars to the check to the white, the green flag or whatever.
Yeah, I just don't think there's any conspiracy here. With the amount of money that's involved for these sponsors to be able to win a pole, especially if you're down the line and you're a young, you know, fairly new team, say you're under 3 years you know, as a new team. I just don't think that – I don't think there's any – I just think it's coincidence, not conspiracy.
And I remember when 50 Cent was chasing – what's her name around the pit? The Fox reporter.
Aaron Andrews.
Yes. When he was chasing her around, and she was running away from 50 Cent, like, you know, 50 Cent was, like, after her. It seems like that is one – like, to be in the pit at Daytona, that's where I want to be. Atlanta Motor Speedway is nice, too. Well, shout out to Atlanta Motor Speedway. But down there at Daytona, I can imagine what it looks like down there in the pits of that thing, because that's bananas. Well, the infield. It's called the infield, right? The infield or the pit? The infield.
The infield and the pits are two different things.
The infield. That's where we were hanging out. The infield. That's where I want to go.
The infield at Daytona is fun.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah, I've never been. It's on my bucket list. I've never been to Daytona.
You got to do it at least once.
Yeah, I've been to Talladega. I've been to North Wilkesboro.
And bring sunscreen. If you have sunscreen or you can bring sunscreen down there, I would sell the mess out of that outside Daytona.
They don't even race in North Wilkesboro anymore, do they?
No. And the thing about Daytona is you don't know the weather you're going to get. I've been down there and been in short sleeves one day and in shorts, and the next day wore like four layers.
I'll tell you what, too. In the infield, beer is in abundance. Like, there's an abundance. There's a plethora. There's a cornucopia of beer to be had in the infield. And other things, but beer is the most thing that's probably in the most abundance.
Yeah, I do want to compare because I've heard the stories about the party that takes place in the infield at Daytona, and I want to compare it, having not been to Daytona, to compare that to the infield party that takes place here at the Kentucky Derby. Because the Kentucky Derby is a party. And that infield at the Kentucky Derby, if you've never been to the Derby, it is one of the great weekends of all time, the Kentucky Derby. Just from a boys' weekend perspective, yeah, you could take your wife and you or your girlfriend.
You don't want to do that.
You can have the, you know, stand up there and look at all the hats and go to the paddock. But you really want to do it right, you go boys' weekend and do the infield. Because the infield at the Derby.
If I go to the Derby, I'm going to be with the common folk, and I don't want to partake in. But I want to be one of the beer throwers at the running of the porta potty. I want to be one of those guys that when the person runs across the top of the porta potties, that gets a chance to hit them with a can of full beer. It's the Philadelphia thing to do.
There's a lot going on, as we mentioned. It is pitchers and catchers today for the Braves. It's Speed Week for Daytona with a big race coming up. We're also asking a social media question today because the NBA draft is going to be something that will be on our mind as the NBA season hits the last kind of quarter of the year, and we were talking earlier with Travis Schlenk, and so the question today that's up on our Facebook and our Twitter at 929 The Game, if the Atlanta Hawks end up with the number one pick overall in the NBA draft, who do you want to take? Do you want Marvin Bagley of Duke? We got to start talking about this if they end up with that ping pong ball. Marvin Bagley at Duke, Trae Young at Oklahoma, Luka Doncic at Real Madrid, and we heard Travis Schlenk say that he was in Madrid watching the 18-year-old Luka Doncic over the weekend, and DeAndre Ayton, the big 7-footer out of Arizona. There are other players, too. And, of course, the Hawks are going to have to end up, actually, in that mix for one of those four because right now the Hawks are number three in the standings, at least third from the bottom of the NBA, and they could end up as far as away as number eight. So it'll be interesting to see. But you can vote on those. Do you want a guard like Trae Young? You want a guy like Bagley, who is probably, you know, I think, player of the year in college basketball at this point. Luka Doncic, I'm going to be really interested. I've seen only video of Luka Doncic to see what he's like when he comes to the United States. Everybody says that this 18-year-old kid from Real Madrid is a dead-eye, sharp-shooting, three-point, just absolutely phenom who can knock it down from you think Trae Young can shoot. Wait till you see Luka Doncic is what they say. So I don't know. That's a tough thing about Euros. It's the hard thing about Euros.
From what I understand from European players is that, like, man, they're fundamental. They're fundamentally more sound than probably some of the players over here in the United States. So that might have that going for them over there. So, you know, you never know.
Well, we certainly look at the spring as being a time of rebirth and renewal. There is spring football to be had with college football coming up. And a lot of spring games, which are already in a number of places sold out for college football spring games. Michigan always gets a big crowd, but there's been a lot of angst right now at Michigan about what's been taking place with their program. They bring Jim Harbaugh in, Hugh, much ballyhooed. Here comes your Michigan man. He's going to save the program. And it's kind of gone, you know. So there are Michigan fans that are starting to grumble a little bit. Ohio State has dominated the league. Penn State has had the better of even Michigan so far. And so Jim Harbaugh returning to Michigan hasn't borne the fruit that they thought it would bear.
No, and they're a little bit upset with that. You know, they brought him back in as the conquering hero, and it hasn't played out the way that they want it to play out. So now, you know, there's starting to be some grumblings there whether or not he's the right man for the job.
And to that end, former Florida coach Jim McElwain, who was for a long time the architect of the Alabama offense, has now joined the staff at Michigan. Now, we're not sure, Bo, whether or not he's going to – what role he's going to exactly take, right?
Well, he's rumored to be joining the staff. He originally, the reports came out that he was going to be involved in play calling and helping run the offense. But now it looks like he will be a wide receiver coach in some capacity. But it's an interesting move, to say the least. If Jim Harbaugh was trying to improve the offense and the quarterback play, I'm not sure hiring a guy who has struggled the last 3 or 4 years with running an offense and improving quarterbacks is the way to go.
So he's on the staff now?
He is rumored to be joining. It looks like he will be joining very soon.
Okay.
It hasn't been officially announced, but it was just thrown out there like it was not going to happen last week.
Right.
And now it's gained a head full of steam and looks like it is happening.
You know, and there are a lot of people who are starting to think that Jim Harbaugh might leave Michigan. This is chatter, and go back to the NFL, because if he were to say, Hugh, for example, raise his hand and say, I want to come back to the NFL, there'd be, you know, a number of teams that would take Jim Harbaugh in a heartbeat.
Didn't he sign an extension at Michigan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got a long-term deal.
Wow, must be nice. That head coaching gig, see, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring next year again for a head coaching job, because that right there, you leave, you sign a deal, you make those commitments to those players, and then you just up and leave.
I'm not saying he's going to. I just think that, you know, it's such an interesting thing right now in college football where, you know, you're chasing, right? Everybody's chasing.
Well, the bar is set high, John.
Right.
It's like it's win or bust, and you have to have a progression of success every year. And for Coach Harbaugh, it's been pretty stagnant. You know, he come in with this, all this pop and pageantry. You know, he's doing the satellite camps and everything, and he's getting all this pub. And you come out, and I think the first year was a pretty decent year. The second year, you go down to Ohio State and get trounced, and then you have what you had happen this year. So, yeah, it's time. People are looking at it. They at least wanted him to be a contender for the college football championship. And you know what? To be honest, now with what Coach Smart has been able to do, and you look at some of the other young coaches that are around in pros and in college, and I kind of see what people are talking about. I mean, you have a lot of coaches who in short periods of time have had a lot of success, i.e. Kirby Smart, Doug Peterson.
Mark Richt.
She made me forget his name. Coach for the Falcons right now. Coach Quinn. Short period of time. A lot of success. So, I mean, I don't think you should be afraid to turn your program over. I think that now what's going to end up happening with Coach Harbaugh signing this long-term deal, coaches are going to start getting, what, 2 and 3 year deals? Schools are going to try to at least shoot for them, because that way, you know, it protects the school and look for a quick turnaround in a short period of time.
The problem with short deals is that coaches don't want them because they want that security. That's why all these coaches get like an extension. It feels like every year at the end of the season, the coach gets an extension, because their rallying cry behind that is, well, how can you expect a player to commit to a school for 4 years when the coach is not even going to be – his contract doesn't even say he's there for 2 years.
Right.
And so it runs into that. But then again, to the counter of that, if I was an AD, I'd say, yeah, but what if you leave – What if you're gone tomorrow
and the
player's committed? But now, if the new rule comes in, it changes even that. So it's such a weird scenario when you bring up the contracts and the way it affects players.
Well, there's no question that I don't know what is going to happen going forward, but the bar at Michigan, with the amount of money that they put in these boosters to send this team to Italy for a month and everything else they've thrown, all the millions upon millions of private dollars that have been thrown at Jim Harbaugh, the expectation level is that Jim Harbaugh will bring Michigan to a national championship and at least make the playoffs. If he doesn't do it in the next couple of years, that pressure may get overwhelming. Because you cannot have Michigan continue to be beat up by Ohio State. That is just not going to fly. No matter what your last name is. We mentioned a huge spring ahead, including, of course, the very latest from the National Football League.
Atlanta now, Martinez, he was brought down. Deflected, Deion Jones has done it again.
Our Atlanta Hawks, United, and Falcons play here. Because the game is everywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
I'm taking medication for bipolar, and I'm working to try and make sure that I don't fall back into any type of depression, because I know where that leads me, and I know how slippery of a slope that is for me.
Johnny Manziel coming out and saying he has bipolar disorder. He's taking medication for it. And in a deep interview that he did with Good Morning America, in an attempt to rehabilitate kind of his own image in his own eyes. And we'll see where this takes Johnny Manziel in his next attempt to return to playing professional football at some point. And welcome back to the morning show with John and Hugh this hour, brought to you by Renter's Warehouse. And one of the things that was true about the Johnny Manziel interview yesterday, whether you believed it or not, and whether you bought into all of it, is that this is a crowded field when it comes to quarterbacks. If he wants to re-enter the game, we talked earlier, Hugh, about whether or not he should accept the offer of the Hamilton Tiger Cats and go to the Canadian League and play for a year, because the NFL has a loaded situation with free agent quarterbacks in terms of the guys that are going to be on the market, the Kirk Cousins, the Sam Bradfords, even a Tyrod Taylor, a lot of veterans on the market, and then a draft class that's coming in that's five or six starters deep, potentially, if you believe nowadays that if you're a Baker Mayfield, a Sam Darnold, a Josh Rosen, that you're walking in and starting right away, Josh Allen, for a team, which may be the case. You know, that you get a chance to walk in if you're...
Some, but for a lot, it doesn't work that way, and you don't have that much success right off the bat. Every team damn near in the NFL is looking for a quarterback. They're looking for a signal caller that can lead them or take them to the next level. Mm-hmm. And if Johnny Manziel has some kind of talent, he'll probably get a chance to be back in the NFL. But he has to prove to teams that his demons are behind him. And I think that's the biggest thing that everybody's looking at. Everybody's looking at him sideways and wondering why all of a sudden now you decided to get this help when you were on this downward spiral. And there were indications even before it got as bad as it did that you were on a downward spiral. Why all of a sudden now do you want to, try to get it together?
Well, that clock ticks too. I mean, if you think you've got a limited amount of time, I wonder what kind of shape he's in terms of playing shape. That's another question that he's going to have to get himself into. He'd have to go to Canada and prove it. I need to see him, not just from a playing standpoint and going to the Canadian League and proving that he can still play, but I'm not sure I trust him enough.
It's all about the way that you handle yourself on and off the field, John. I mean, that's what we're really talking about. You know, to have a couple games under your belt and see how do you handle that success. Say if you go up there to Hamilton and win a couple games, you win a couple games. How are you going to handle Friday night or Saturday night or whenever you play? You know, after a big win, after a big home game, how are you going to handle that? Are you going to go out and get faded? And, go tear up the town, or are you going to go home and, relax, probably go get a nice little bite to eat and just chill out? Not saying you got to be a choir boy, not saying that you don't have to, hang out with the fellas or whatnot, but be responsible in some of the decisions that you make. I think that's the biggest question that a lot of people have with Johnny Manziel.
And then no question he's a talent. I mean, the numbers that he put up are, we understand that he's a talent. I mean, you win the Heisman and put up those kind of numbers at A&M, we get it. You go to Alabama and put on a show like you did, we get it. But when you go to the NFL, if you want to blame all the demons for your lack of success in the NFL, you want to blame the fact that you weren't on a very good team in Cleveland, that's fine. Go ahead and blame that. But really, it's all on you. And right now, you have these – to take this kind of a – I just wouldn't take a flyer on Johnny Manziel. Let's say you have a team that's got an established quarterback. Let's say you're the, you know, Atlanta Falcons and you have an established quarterback. Would you take a flyer on Johnny Manziel to come in here and be the backup? I wouldn't. I just don't trust him enough. And then I look around. I've never seen a mock draft that at the top of the mock draft, there was so much unsured, you know, so many differing opinions as to how the draft might go. I mean, I've seen mock drafts where in the past, you know, you didn't know what was going to happen from three or four down because it could go any way. Teams could trade up, but we don't have any. But at the top of the draft, I have seen, we're talking about the biggest of the big here, okay? And we're talking about the big mock drafts out there, whether it's CBS or if it's, you know, Walter Football or ESPN or Rivals or whoever the mock draft is coming from, all the major Yahoo, all the major mock drafts, and they all have somebody different going to the Cleveland Browns number one. Some have Sam Darnold. Some have Josh Rosen. Some have Baker Mayfield. Some have Josh Allen. Some have Saquon Barkley. I mean, it's just so unsettled.
And that's probably the way that the Cleveland draft boards looks as we speak about, as you speak about that, John, is that they don't even know. Cleveland has had so much, not success, but they've had so many issues with that first round draft pick, especially when it comes to picking a quarterback, that they probably don't know what they want to do. I think, me personally, if I'm the Cleveland Browns organization, I'm a part of the organization, I go Saquon Barkley, and I might keep DeShone Kizer and let him quarterback for a little while, because it's one of those things where we didn't really get a chance to see what he could do. Now, I know that, you know, conventional wisdom would tell you that you'll still be in position because you got like the first pick and the fourth pick or something like that, that you could still get one of those serviceable quarterbacks in that draft. But I would be at this point a little gun shy about some of the quarterbacks that I've picked in the past, because you've missed on a few. You missed on Carson Wentz. You know, you could have had Carson Wentz for the Cleveland Browns, but you don't want him because you felt like his game from North Dakota State did not transfer to the NFL.
And you missed on guys that you've taken, like the Tim Couches of the world.
Well, how can we say without a shadow of a doubt that Johnny Manziel can't play in the NFL after only 8 games? But DeShone Kizer's, I'm not saying you, but I'm saying, but we've heard experts say that. And then I've heard other experts kind of like that say, well, DeShone Kizer, you know, should still get more shot at the job. And he had he played in all 16, I think, and started like 15 of them or something. It's just funny how that, I think people judge, you know, I know the actions off the field between the two were completely different. And based on his actions on the field, DeShone Kizer deserves more of a chance than Manziel, but still, it hasn't been very good at all in any way at quarterback for that team, I think.
Well, they haven't had a quarterback that was really any good since Bernie Kosar.
Jeff Garcia was okay.
Yeah.
And they had one playoff quarterback. Was it not Hoyer? Who was the quarterback that took him to the playoffs?
Brian Sipe back in the day.
Well, Derek Anderson took him to 10-6, but they missed the playoffs.
Derek Anderson?
He took him to 10-6, but I'm pretty positive they missed the playoffs.
We're talking about the new Cleveland Browns,
We're talking about the ones that, like, in the last few years, came back to Cleveland. I think, didn't Jeff Garcia get him to the playoffs?
I think they only have, if they have one, a playoff appearance, they only have one. I'll have to double check that.
Yeah, I'm going to use Google A right now.
But here's the thing. This is why I tend to agree with Hugh about this, is that you've got to be really super careful when it comes to, you know, drafting a quarterback, because you cannot afford to make a mistake. I can understand how Cleveland would be gun-shy.
Their last playoff appearance was in 2002.
Who's QB?
I am double-checking that right now as we speak to see who it was exactly, because it's been a long time.
I mean, are we convinced that – look, again, on the list of draft quarterbacks, I think if you held a gun to my head and said, you got to pick one, John, that's you're most convinced will be the guy coming out of this, I would say it's Josh Rosen. But that doesn't mean I'm right. It could be Baker Mayfield. It could be that in 5 years we're going, you know, that Josh Allen is the greatest quarterback in the NFL. Now, there are a lot of people that aren't buying into Josh Allen, primarily because he played at Wyoming. But because he played at Wyoming doesn't mean anything. There were people sold on Carson Wentz because he played at North Dakota State. So a lot of it depends upon, you know, the team that he gets into and the system that he gets into and whether or not he gets killed.
The last team, the last quarterback to take the Browns to the playoffs was Kelly Holcomb.
Out of Middle Tennessee State. That was a minute ago. Now, Kelly Holcomb played in the late 90s in college, so he's been a while. I remember when he was at Middle. That would have been like 95, somewhere in there? 95, 96?
02.
Oh, he took him in 02? No, I was thinking about his college days.
Yeah, his mid-90s. He was undrafted in the 95 draft.
Yep.
So, 94, 93.
Yep, in there. And he came out of Murfreesboro and went into the NFL. And so, yeah, and again, there's another thing where I don't know. I tend to be alongside of Hugh here on this. I mean, Saquon Barkley and Minka Fitzpatrick, seems to me I'm going to build around those guys because, again, remember when you're talking about the Cleveland Browns, they have the number one pick of the second round, okay? If you really absolutely have to have a quarterback, there's a good chance that Mason Rudolph will be there.
Man, I tell you, a good running back will take a lot of pressure off a quarterback. Ask Blake Bortles. Ask him. I mean, you make you look good. I mean, I'm not saying that Deshaun Kaiser is the answer. But with your history with quarterbacks, I would say I would go Saquon Barkley and then take it from there.
If you can't find one in free agency and you think that there is absolutely without a shadow of doubt a guy who can lead your franchise for the next 10 years at one, you take him. Because I think that you can still get Saquon Barkley. I think there's a really good chance he's still there at four. And you take him. You don't pass. If you think that the quarterback's there, you can't pass up.
I know,
you
can't make that mistake again. You'll set your franchise back a decade, too. This is the conundrum they're in.
But you've done it. You've done it a couple of times by picking guys at the end of the first round.
I mean, if you really think there's a quarterback there, the quarterback is going to be there at four.
Bo's like, hey, you ain't had no problem setting your franchise back all these other years. What's so different about this
year? Don't forget.
I mean, the two teams at 2 and 3 are going to take quarterbacks. I think we know that. Well, I don't know that Indianapolis will take
the
quarterback.
But they've tried drafting him at the end of the rounds, too, and it didn't work either.
Well, that's Johnny Manziel. Yes. All right, Brady Quinn. Some of the stories we missed on an interesting Tuesday. We'll venture into the Wendy Zone next with John and you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Millennials are educated.
You tickle my intellectual fancy.
Connected and diverse, except when they're not.
Just a tip.
Sort of like the show, actually. The Bunker Mentality. Evenings from 7 to 11. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, everybody stand up!
It's time for a look at the world of sports, celebrities, and more. This is the Wendy Zone on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, Sports Illustrated does it every single year. I'm talking about the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, and they've released their cover model today after about a month long of sort of releasing the pictures that were going to be in the magazine and the girls that were going to be featured in the magazine. And this year, it's Danielle Harrington, who is a 24-year-old model from Compton, California. She made her debut in the swimsuit issue last year in 2017, was surprised by Tyra Banks to reveal her 2018 cover wearing this sort of hot pink string bikini. She looks beautiful. She becomes the third black woman to cover the SI Swim since the franchise began back in 1964, following in the steps of Tyra Banks, who had two covers, and then also Beyonce, who had a cover back in 2007.
I feel creepy looking at that picture, though.
She's 24.
Yeah, but 24,
I don't feel creepy.
She's around my daughter's age.
She's beautiful.
Oh, she is.
Hub City, stand up. What's up, Compton?
Yeah, she caked and pied out, though.
Yeah, she
isn't
is.
Isn't that the age you like, you?
No, it's more like 30. I'm more of a 30-ish. Because it's a little bit. You lived a little. At 24, you haven't lived life at 24. You broke up with your first boyfriend in college at 24.
So for most people. I was, looking on their Twitter account, the SI Swim Twitter account, and they have pictures of the girls who are going to be in the magazine.
Right.
Jeannie Bouchard and Sloane Stephens, who are tennis stars, their pictures are featured. And Sloane Stephens has some muscles. Like, her abs are on par.
You know, it used to be the SI swimsuit was, it was the issue. And then other magazines started to copy it. And then ESPN went on with that whole body issue thing. right?
Well, SI is kind of copying now in the body issue because there are some women who have like messages written on their bodies. Allie Raisman is one of them who will be in this edition.
Right. Yeah, so they're kind of copying that.
I remember the first year they did those painted on bathing suits in SI.
Ronda Rousey had one of those.
Didn't they do the big girls last year?
That was 2016.
Tribute to the big women.
No, that was 2016. They featured model Ashley Graham, who just opened a New York Fashion Week runway show, which is the first time that's ever happened.
Give it up for the big girls.
Yeah. Ashley Graham's beautiful.
Ashley Graham is cool.
And then Kate.
She knows how to make a sandwich.
Well, Hugh, you're always complaining about girls that need meat on their bones.
No, I like them. You know what I mean? I like them with a little bit of meat on their bones. She just seems like she knows how to. I'm just saying, Wendy, I don't mean anything
by it.
She
works out all the time.
And she's a big girl. That's okay.
She's a beautiful girl.
Did you say she knows how to make a sandwich?
You appreciate a woman that knows her way around a sandwich. I didn't want to say kitchen because Wendy gave me that dirty look. But I didn't mean it like it sounded. It just came out wrong. It's not like she's in the kitchen like cooking. But I'm pretty sure she makes her own sandwiches because
she's healthy.
Yes.
Also, there's many pictures of Kate Upton. If you are a Kate Upton fan, I feel like they release like 9,000 pictures of her for every single SI swimsuit edition. And sometimes, just it's okay to let other girls be a part of the issue. But if you're a fan of Kate Upton.
Is she back in the issue again this year?
Yes, but they released like this video of like 19,000 photos they took of her for the issue.
Oh,
she's
really?
Not on the cover
right
this year because she's been on the cover like 9 times. But yeah. She
a married woman and all that kind of stuff.
Part of the deal. Yeah, he got married to Justin Verlander late last year. Well, did you guys catch the 2018 Westminster Dog Show? Because part one was on last night and part two will finish up tonight. So last night, if you missed it, it was the Hound Group, the Toy Group, the Non-Sporting Group, and the Herding Group. Tonight you will have the Sporting Group, Working Group, and the Terrier Group, followed by Best in Show. It starts at 8 p.m.
Hold up. They did that more than one day?
Oh, yeah. It's a two-night event now, Hugh.
Ain't nobody about to be watching the dog show for no 2 nights.
Oh, yeah.
Sure people will.
People were tweeting about it last night. Guys in sports were tweeting about watching
They're
it last night.
They're called lonely people.
No.
Yeah, I'm not watching the dog show. Yeah,
I've seen a little bit of it. There's some of those dogs. No. Some good looking dogs, man, but no, I'm not.
No, I'm not watching the dog show.
The Border Collie won the Herding Group. You had a Bichon Frise who won the Non-Sporting Group, a Pug, and then a Borzoi. I don't know how to say it, won the Hound Group.
Yeah,
but I'll be interested.
It's not my thing.
To see. Well, if you are interested in it, it'll be on Fox tonight, I believe. FS1 tonight at 8.
So counter programming to the Olympics, I get it.
Every year, John. It's okay. Awesome.
I'm not trying to. No, the people obviously they love it. They watch the Puppy Bowl too. The dogs on TV thing is like, get a dog. Play with your own dog.
But a lot of people watch that because they are trying to figure out what kind of dog they want to get.
And you never know which one you want.
No,
well,
you don't.
Chloe Kim absolutely owned the women's half pipe at the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang. In Pyeongchang, so we're ahead. And she still found time to be hilarious on Twitter. The 17-year-old snowboarder tweeted mid-competition saying she was getting hangry while participating in the half pipe. This is what she tweeted. Wish I finished my breakfast sandwich, but my stubborn self decided not to, and now I'm getting hangry. So tweeting while in competition, this is how you know we have entered the Millennial Olympics with kids now born in 2000s.
So wait a second, they're tweeting during the competition? I mean,
this was during the competition.
Because you know how you get in the right, you can't do that in the NFL. You can't do that in other pro sports. You get in all sorts of trouble if you're on the bench, tweeting out there during the competition going on, right?
It's not against the rules, though, right?
Apparently
now,
not at the Olympics, it's not.
I wonder if they'll add it, but I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, it's your competition. You're doing it for yourself instead of really being a team.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And that girl who crashed, there was a bad crash in the Luge today. We understand that she's fine. The American who crashed.
No broken bones.
No broken bones in her final run at the Luge. That's but good. there was some concern over that.
She might be in concussion protocol because she apparently was very wobbly when she left, but she was conscious.
And that's the event that I put down. You know how John, you and Hugh said this morning that y'all could do curling?
Curling.
And so I asked the question on Twitter, what event do you think you could win? And I put the Luge, and now I'm regretting putting the Luge after hearing about that accident because it's kind of scary.
Yeah. Whenever you strap yourself to a skate down a hill on ice at 80 miles an hour, and as bad as the Luge is, I don't get the skeleton. I mean, face first? No way.
But at least you could see it coming. The loser actually doing like a
not skeleton,
crunch,
skeleton is face
like
first.
All the way down. It's like an ab crunch all the way down.
80 miles an hour?
Head first.
Yeah. You
can see.
Yeah, but you ain't got that much reaction time.
But you can control. You got. I think there are little controls like on the bottom of it or whatever that you can kind of steer it.
You're out of ice at 80 miles an hour down
I skint myself up in Chattanooga coming down one of them little hills like that.
Man.
No, thank you.
What if you ride a bike down a hill going fast? How are you supposed to stop yourself? No one ever says cycling.
Bikes have brakes. Losers don't have brakes.
They have brakes.
They do?
Yeah.
No, they don't.
They have brakes on the little sled, on the little okay. The skis.
You keep thinking that. Have you seen those skiers that
they have brakes on the bobsleds, too.
No, they have.
How
they
do
have
you brake on ice going down a hill, though?
Ask the bobsledders, because there's a breaker and there's a driver.
You are so present.
In the middle.
Them brakes don't work for real.
Yes.
Okay.
Because you have to have a breaker. If you don't have a breaker, you're just going to go
that,
off.
Ain't that like weight, like the balance and counterbalance on the
I don't know.
I'm talking about stuff I have no clue about, but I'm saying it was so much confidence.
I know. You're getting into math, and I don't know the math.
Rick and John, top of the hour. As they get ready for their excursion into this Tuesday, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.